Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting of the Housing Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Houseman?
Present.
Howard? Howard? Tice?
Present.
Igbaje?
Present.
Bliss?
Present.
Gomez? Gomez? Hassan?
Hassan is present.
Heinrich?
Present.
Herr?
Present.
Juergens?
Juergens present.
Olson?
Present.
Farr?
Present.
Ryer?
Present.
And then Howard?
Present.
And one last time, Gomez?
Present.
Perfect. Madam Chair, we do have a quorum.
Thank you. The next order of business is approval of the minutes from Thursday, March 11. Representative Howard, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, so moved.
Representative Howard moves approval of the minutes. Is there any discussion? If not, members, if you would unmute yourselves for a voice vote. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Representative Olson has House File 1901 today. Representative Olson, would you like to move your House File?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move that House File 1901 be laid over for possible inclusion.
And there is an author's amendment to get the bill before you in the way you'd like to present. Would you like to move that amendment first?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move the amendment, and I'd be happy to quickly explain it.
Yes, please.
And so this is just simply a language change. We had the name of the One Roof Community mm-hmm. Housing. We needed to just fix that name. So it's a simple technical amendment.
So Representative Olson moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion to the author's amendment? If not, all those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Olson, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So as we know, nothing else goes well when people don't have stable housing. It provides the foundation for health, safety, economic well-being, and educational opportunities. House File 1901 would fund a pilot program for an organization with a proven track record of helping address housing needs within our community to establish a new dormitory-style apartments for individuals experiencing homelessness and determine if it could serve as a model to address the needs in other communities throughout the state. One Roof Community Housing led a months-long process with 10 housing and service providers, the City of Duluth, St. Louis County, architects and general contractors to devise a new model of developing housing for people experiencing homelessness. This group believes that it can develop the new model for half the cost of a typical state-funded project for people experiencing homelessness. This bill provides $3 million in fiscal year 22 to Run Roof Community Housing for a pilot program to build 12-unit dormitory-style apartments to house individuals experiencing homelessness. The executive director of the organization must submit a report to the legislative committees with jurisdiction over housing by January 15, 2023, with details that include the number of weeks from the start of the design to when the building was occupied, the per unit cost of each building, total number of individuals served in each building, any suggested modifications to the design of the building, if the model is replicated by other nonprofits and political subdivisions. Viability of the operations and service provisions in the building. And so that includes the details of the bill. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifiers. I have two, Laura Birnbaum from St. Louis County, Jason Hale from the City of Duluth, and Jeff Corey is here from One Roof Community Housing just to answer questions. So I think we could start with Ms. Birnbaum.
I'm just so thrilled to see this bill because I've just always believed that different housing models have to be part of our discussion if we're really going to provide sufficient. And so I'm very encouraged to see someone coming with a different model for housing. So we'll start with Laura Birnbaum. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Laura Birnbaum and I work for St. Louis County Public Health and Human Services, supervising our housing and homelessness program team. And I'm pleased and grateful to be with you this morning. Homelessness and housing instability continues to be a barrier with increasing challenges for all households in our community, including singles. As of last week in Duluth alone, 1,240 households are on our coordinated entry system priority list. Our coordinated entry system is intended to match households experiencing homelessness with housing that meets their needs. Of these 1,240 households, 860 are single households, and over half of them qualify for our long-term homelessness housing support program. This data is significant in itself, knowing that our priority lists do not capture every household that is experiencing homelessness or at risk of homelessness in our communities. If a person qualifies for this program, it means that they have experienced homelessness for over 1 year or four times in the past 3 years. It also means that they meet certain income and asset limits, as well as have a disability that limits their self-sufficiency. For example, they may have disabilities related to mental or chemical health and therefore need or would benefit from supplemental services such as medication reminders, help with transportation, making appointments, and connecting to other social services. Without these additional supports and services in place, people risk losing their housing. COVID-19 has shown a light on this. We have seen households who have lost necessary level of support with case managers or mental health providers due to the pandemic, who then have an increased mental health symptoms or substance use, often leading to an inability to follow through on important paperwork related to housing or insurance or SNAP renewals, all of which can spiral and then lead to more increased mental, physical, and chemical health concerns, as well as eviction and homelessness. Clearly, the supportive component and permanent supportive housing is critical. It is also important to note that our housing support program is guided by housing first principles, knowing that people need a home before they can even start contemplating recovery. Housing first is a recovery-oriented approach to ending homelessness. We know that people are better able to move forward in their life if they are first housed. This is as true for people experiencing homelessness and those with mental health and substance use issues as it is for anyone. Housing is provided first and then supports are provided, including but not limited to physical and mental health, employment, case management, treatment, and community connections. This new model will envelop these principles as well to be able to holistically support individuals when this becomes their home. Housing support is a phenomenal resource and we are working hard to increase awareness and utilization of it in order to address the needs stated previously. The barrier in our community we often run into is the lack of actual physical housing infrastructure, which is why we are here before you today. We know that permanent supportive housing works and that it is desperately needed. Not only does it support people to maintain their housing, often breaking the cycles of homelessness and poverty, but it also improves health and quality of life. The new model will provide a home, supportive services, and be able to build community based on needs, interests, and strengths of residents. Not only will this benefit the individuals who will live here, but our community as a whole. If House File 1901 passes, it will provide the funding needed to make this project a reality. This project builds upon our strong community partnerships and offers an example of how our relationships with housing and service providers, along with your support, can bring a piece of the solution to end homelessness. We have a shared goal, and we know we can't do it alone. This concludes my remarks. Thank you for your time today and the work you do to support our communities across the state. I will stay on for any questions that you may have as well. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And now we have Jason Hale from the City of Duluth. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Again, my name is Jason Hale, and I've had the privilege of working as first an economic developer and then now as a housing developer for the City of Duluth since 2015. During my time with the city, I've gained a deep appreciation for the interdependent relationship between housing and economic development. Without affordable, accessible housing, employers continue to have difficulty retaining and recruiting talent. And without a healthy local economy, businesses have a hard time paying the wages that are required to obtain that housing. I imagine it will be no surprise to the committee to hear that Duluth is experiencing a housing shortage issue. Like much of our beautiful state, Duluth housing market is increasingly tight. So for example, in 2020, the median time on the market for a single family home in Duluth was 7 days. Well, the solution seems simple: to relieve pressure on prices from high demand, just increase the supply. Unfortunately, as we know, the cost of material and labor render this less simple than it sounds. Building was expensive before the pandemic, and particularly so in Duluth. We share the same cost challenges as other Minnesota communities, but we also must contend with steep hills, bedrock, wetlands, and a rather large lake on our eastern border, not to mention a pretty short building season. We can celebrate that the end of the pandemic is in view, and we should, but the housing crisis will not go away when we return to whatever normal looks like. Safe, stable housing is a key determinant for improved health outcomes, access to employment, and greater financial stability. This is increasingly important for those facing barriers to obtaining housing. We need housing of all types across all price points right now, but the most acute need is for those earning very little or nothing, especially those in our neighborhoods struggling with homelessness. While we have access to some tools and resources to help encourage and develop more affordable housing, the truth is they're simply inefficient to address the need. But for example, the low-income housing tax credit project, which we're all familiar with, is critical, but there are not nearly enough tax credits available to fund the applications that Minnesota Housing receives each year. Even when projects are funded through LIHTC program, it can take 3 years to complete. Ms. Birnbaum made it clear, people need housing today, and people needed housing a year ago. The new model was designed to help address this particular need and to do so more nimbly than existing programs allow. The compact 12-unit design offers a small footprint at a scale that is easily replicable and will fit in most residential neighborhoods. There are still, of course, details to work out. It is a pilot program. And given the market we're in right now, costs still remain there's some uncertainty surrounding those. Nevertheless, this pilot program and the grant would mean that 24 of the roughly 450 waiting eligible homeless individuals in Duluth alone, 24 of them will get safe, affordable housing years faster at a lower cost than would otherwise be possible. I'm convinced that if we can do this in Duluth, we can do this model anywhere in Minnesota. Thank you, and I will also remain for any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Olson, the third name you mentioned, was that only for questions, or do we have a third testifier?
Madam Chair, Jeff Corey from Run Roof Housing is here if there are questions.
If there are questions. So questions from members of either testifiers or the author. Mr. Worth, do we have any questions?
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative Tice has a question.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm really excited about this model and was excited when I saw it on the news. And but I have some questions about, you know, how are the units inside constructed? Are they more or less manufactured homes that you're putting, you know, little models that you're putting in there? Or are you building the structures? And I forgot how many square feet that they are.
Yeah. Olson?
Madam Chair, I will turn that over to Mr. Corey for questions like that.
Yeah, Mr. Corey, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Tice, my apologies for jumping in a bit early there. The total size of the buildings to be constructed is about 4,000 square feet. And so okay. Each unit will be quite small. Think of a typical dormitory room with a shower, sink, small kitchenette, bed, aesthetically designed so that they feel good, but also super durable. And then the construction we're contemplating presently is stick-built construction. We are open to exploring modular with future rounds of the project, but it seems that the most useful way to start is to just do the stick building. It's new enough just as it is without adding one more wrinkle to that. So,
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Corey, I really appreciate that because, you know, I think it's this whole model just really is really cool for the dormitory living. And I'm hoping this summer to go to Kansas and they have a community that is all smaller homes, but it's veteran driven. And it's just really a cool thing. And I think having folks together as supports really works out very, very well. I'm just looking at my notes here. So if we were to do this, and this is, so we'll just have one in, is it Minneapolis? And no, and Duluth? So how much time do you think before you can have it up and running?
Mr. Corey.
I believe we should be able to be, you know, shortly after the funding award, we could move into design. So it kind of depends on the timing from that. But I think if, you know, like assuming a May funding decision, or we probably could be through design within about 90 days and potentially into construction this fall. So we'll just have to see, but it's a fairly simple design. The architect that we're working with has done similar things to this, typically larger scale, but I think it can be adapted fairly quickly.
So. Rips up ties.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that this is a really, I don't want to say bad year, but it probably is, very difficult and challenging year in order to get materials, and materials have gone up really, really high. And we haven't found out our targets yet. And so I hope that some projects like this is something we can look at so that we can get those different ideas out there and to help folks and communities have housing available. It makes sense to me. So thank you, Representative Olson, for bringing this forward. And I look forward to seeing what happens in the future.
Thank you. Other questions, Mr. Wirth?
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative Ryer has a question.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson, I'll join the chorus of people who are happy to see this project. I think it's an interesting and potentially very flexible and adaptable model. I have some questions about more the implementation for people. And one is, I'll just tell you the few of them. Is this seen as permanent or transitional housing or somewhere in the middle? What are you thinking in terms of how long a person may stay there and then what their next step in the housing continuum may be? Related to that, you'd mentioned supportive services. And is that funded through the $3 million or is that strictly construction and you're looking for other funding sources for those supportive services? And finally, will the people who are living there, what will their contribution to rent be? Will it be a standard 30%? So it's really about, it's built, how do we move forward? Thank you.
Three questions here, Representative Olson or Mr. Corey?
Madam Chair, I will turn it over to Representative Corey, but I will say, Representative Ryer, those were some of the things, you know, I think you're asking the right questions about, like, how do we make this successful? You could build a building, but you need everything you're talking about thought out. And I know that the stakeholders here have done that, and I'll turn it over to Jeff to speak about that.
Mr. Corey.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I don't know if you caught all three questions.
I think I did. Yeah. So the first one was relative to the term of tenancy for the folks that would be living in the buildings to be constructed, right? That we're envisioning this as permanent supportive housing. And so given the vast numbers of folks that are presently experiencing homelessness in our community and around the state, we believe this model is a viable long-term option for folks. It doesn't have the elbow room that some places have, but if we think about what we're seeing in the market of micro apartments and that sort of thing, this feels like a decent, humane, safe, healthy housing option for folks longer term. That isn't to say that folks couldn't move from there when they have ability and interest in doing so. That's definitely the case. Service funding would be provided by the housing supports source of the state, formerly known as group residential housing. Interestingly, that also will provide the rental assistance that folks will need to be living there. So in order for tenants to be living at the place, at these buildings, they will rely on the housing supports program for their rent assistance and their service provision. There will also be housing stabilization dollars in the model of the service provision that we have and another state program. And really, we designed this program largely to try to maximize the housing supports usage in our community. Right now, we have some usage of that program. It's growing a bit, but it's sort of painful to see existing single family homes be tried to be used for this when, you know, there's a more appropriate use for those places and a place that, you know, and another model that would provide more privacy and, you know, appropriate space for adults to live together too. So.
Representative Ryer, follow up.
Yeah, I appreciate the, Madam Chair, I appreciate the thoughtfulness that has gone into this and thinking through As I look at the system as a whole, it feels like we've got many great pieces, and I like that you're filling in the structural piece into this web of supportive services. So thank you.
Any other questions, Mr. Worth?
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative Tice has a question.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a couple questions. Have you thought about using some of the school programs? They have, you know, different building programs than they, like I think about St. Cloud Tech. They do Tiger Build, and they build a smaller place. And I'm just wondering if there would be, if this could possibly be an avenue where we could have some of the kiddos help alongside and learn a little bit more about the construction company.
Mr. Corey?
That's absolutely something that could happen. In this instance, we're wanting to sort of demonstrate the viability with, you know, the regular payment of a general contractor so that we can, you know, more easily replicate it. We've actually got some experience working with both the secondary technical school of the high school level here and with Lake Superior College in our history. And it's a great thing to do. And particularly the college program would have the ability to probably in a year's time do the bulk of the work that would need to be done on one of these buildings. So that is something that could be part of the replicability of it if that works in a given community.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Mr. Corey. I would like your contact information so that maybe we could talk at some point and I could take a look at maybe doing something like that around here too. We're always looking for, you know, something to have some housing available. So I know we've seen a hotel taken down this past year on the southeast side, and you know, we haven't really, I don't know that we've really replaced it. So I think there's some avenues to do that here. But did you go to St. John's?
I did go to St.
John's. Yay! Thank you, Madam Chair. And you snowboard. That's two pluses in my book. You know St. Cloud and you snowboard. So thank you very much for all your stuff. And if you could just let me know your contact, and then maybe this summer or something we can talk a little bit more and all that, I'd really be appreciated. Thank you.
Further questions, Mr. Worth?
Madam Chair, no questions in the queue.
Representative Olson, it's interesting how experience is connect at a certain point, but I've worked with the International Institute a good deal, and they their work is welcoming new Americans and helping them with their education and job search. And the executive director there said that their one biggest problem as they try to help this population is housing. And she said, sometimes I wish I could just build a dormitory. And you're doing it. So Representative Olson, final comments for Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to my testifiers. I have to say the enthusiasm this committee is sharing right now is great, and that's the spirit of it. You know, there will be the report back to the legislature so that this learning can be replicated. I think, you know, what we want, not just to benefit Duluth, we want this to benefit the entire state. And so that was really intentional with the way that the project was brought forward, and I appreciate all of the intention that went into creating this bill. I have to say, when I first heard about it, I also was excited. I've been working in this arena for a number of years and alongside a lot of these partners, and what I love about my community is we have big problems, but we have big ideas, and we work collaboratively to figure that out. And so I love the spirit that this group is bringing, not just to Duluth, but wanting to bring this to the entire state, and this could really be a game changer if we invest in a pilot program like this. So I appreciate your support for House File 1901.
And House File 1901, as amended, is laid over. Representative Keeler, House File 900. The chair will move House File 900, and this bill also will be laid over. Representative Keeler, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Madam Chair, I also have an amendment to the bill.
Author's amendment. Would you like to adopt the amendment before presenting your bill? I will move the A4 to get the bill in shape the author desires. Any discussion to the A4? Or maybe you could just briefly tell us what the A4 does.
Sure, Madam Chair, I'd love to. So we've talked about House File 900 and a couple other committees, and one of the things that I like to do is take the feedback that I receive. And so the original task force was going to have 50 plus people, because as we know, homelessness is a huge issue. The feedback that we got along the way was that that's just a really big task force, which I agree. And so we've done the work behind the scenes to reduce this to a task force of 24, cutting it almost in half, but still trying to build a task force that could be the most effective, but also taking the fact that the other party was really concerned about the size. So that is the amendment.
Any discussion to the author's amendment? Mr. Wirth, do we have any?
Madam Chair, no hands up.
So this is the author's amendment to cut the size of the task force. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Keeler, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm really excited to be here. This bill is designed to create a task force around our shelter bill of rights. As a lot of us know, shelters are an option for people to get off the street, but a lot of our individuals don't necessarily feel safe in that environment. And so what the task force is doing is it's working as a collaborative effort. So it's bringing state agencies, organizations, but most importantly, it's bringing people who have experienced unsheltered life and life in shelter centers together to talk about solutions. What we've done is we've created an outline to have an initial report and a final report. The idea is that these are in timeline for us to hopefully look at opportunities that we can look at new legislation to put into play. We want to be mindful, though, that we're not doing such massive work that we're going to put our shelters out of business. We know that that's something that's really important, but we do want to make these spaces safe, welcoming, and affirming for all of our individuals who are utilizing these spaces. With that being said, I am going to pass it over. I have a couple testifiers with me today, Madam Chair. I will pass it over to them. Thank you.
Thank you. Interesting, this winter, as local officials were trying to convince people to move out of encampments and into shelters, which would be, they thought, safer and warmer, they found very little interest in having people move. And I thought to myself, we really need to be asking people, what is it you're looking for? What is the model that would work for you so that we could get you to a safer place? So that's what you're doing. Yeah. I think Ron Elwood is first, is that right? From Legal Aid.
Yes.
Mr. Elwood, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ron Elwood from Legal Aid, and I am really proud on behalf of Legal Aid to be invited to be a part of the coalition of organizations supporting House File 900. House File 900 came about because of the dedication and determination of a group of people with lived experience of homelessness and residing in shelter, who formed organizations known as Street Voices of Change and Freedom from the Streets. House File 900 tackles one of the last remaining, if not the last remaining, large systems that are without any standards, oversight, or statutory or statewide coherence. Its mission is to bring all of the different people, voices, and organizations that this system touches to, as Representative Keeler said, collaboratively bring standards and coherence to this undeniably, if sadly, essential type of housing. I just want to emphasize two points. First, this coalition is made up of both people with lived experience in shelter and the providers of that shelter. And as such, there is a shared understanding that there is the need to develop a set of uniform standards and rights for those experiencing homelessness and residing in shelter, but also an equal need to ensure that there are sufficient resources for shelter providers to comply with any new standards, and a common desire to ensure, again, to emphasize what Representative Keeler just said, that there is no unintended consequence of forcing shelters to close. Second, there is a universal recognition that shelter may look different in Greater Minnesota, suburban Minnesota, and in the Twin Cities. This coalition is committed, and this task force is designed to dive deeply into these varying circumstances. Finally, Legal Aid, again, is privileged to be working with a a host of groups, the Coalition for the Homeless, NAMI, Align Minnesota, Catholic Charities, Partners for Affordable Housing, Central Lutheran Church, Churches United, MICA, and Help Homeless Helping Homeless on this bill. I want to thank Representative Keeler and Representative Gomez for their strong leadership on this issue, and I appreciate the time. I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Tyra Thomas. Thank you.
Tyra Thomas, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for the opportunity to speak today. Representative Hausman, I want to thank you especially. When you talked about shelter savings lives, that is true. It's very much true. I stayed in an abandoned house in North Minneapolis, and I'm born and raised in South Minneapolis because I didn't know where to go. And then I ended up in couch-to-couch situations where it was sexually abusive. And then I went to shelter, and I still experienced sexual harassment as a African-American woman in shelter, and I was paying for that service. I didn't know who to talk to about going to housing. No one in the shelter talked to me from a housing case management on options or understanding what needs I had for to fit my needs as my individual person. And everyone is complicated. I met many people along the way that were men and women who were separated from their families because they didn't have appropriate housing and child protection took them. So the complication of coordinated entry in shelters is really deep. And the task force would have that conversation with lived experience at the table to navigate those deep and complicated individualized situations. And for us to be one of the coldest states in the country and in some parts of the year, we experience all four seasons to the fullest. I really feel we need together to find a way to keep people out of inclement weather and give everyone an opportunity at the best of after we've saved that life, that we take care of that life. The standard of care that we're talking about is based on Street Voices of Change, Shelter Residents Bill of Rights, that we put together over the course of 4 years, a lot of loss. When I think about George Floyd, he worked at a shelter. He came here homeless. And I often wonder what his thoughts are today. So I stand here today in solidarity, in honor of all the lives lost during being homeless, and that we can together set a standard of care that can recognize that the individual is separate from each other, and that we really be intentional, if you will, about how we make sure people find their way homes. And I thank you so much for this, and I truly thank you for supporting this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas, for your testimony. Melissa Carlson from Partners for Affordable Housing, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Hi, I'm Melissa Carlson, and I've been advocating with Partners for Housing and MCH in Greater Minnesota. And I was homeless when I was pregnant and after my child was born. And I was scared to seek out a shelter because I was worried that I would lose my child to Child Protective Services. And I got to my lowest point in my life, and I knew it wasn't right for my child to be homeless. So I did check in with a shelter. I was put on a waiting list. And when I did get accepted, it was great. I mean, my life was going somewhere, and for my child, they didn't take my child. They supported me as a mother, and I was in an abusive relationship. And I felt very safe in the common areas in the shelter. And there's 24-hour staff members. So if something would happen, I could go to somebody. And they gave me the resources for getting medical assistance and food support. And I did get put back out onto the streets when you have so many days that you stay at the shelter and you have to move on. And I did get thrown back out on the street because I was very vulnerable and somebody scanned me on an apartment. So I was back out on the street, but my shelter, they still stayed connected with me and they helped me get housing. They helped me with the application. And I'm now living in my own home and they are still supporting me, stay in contact with me, making sure everything is okay. I moved on from my abuser and I got my own job and my kids are in school, growing up, and I'm starting school too. And everything is just awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carlson. We are always so relieved to hear that there's a positive direction now when we hear these stories. So thank you. Thank you for sharing yours.
Thank you.
And now we have Emily Goldberg, Freedom from the Streets. Ms. Goldberg, welcome.
Hello. I'm going to see if my camera will work because the internet likes to mess up. But we'll see if it works for the meantime. Hi, I'm Emily Goldberg. I work with Freedom from the Streets. I'm actually here to talk about, I was also in shelter when my daughter was about 4 months old. We were couch hopping and it took us about 6 months to get into the shelter because of the criteria they had. We were located at PSP in Minneapolis. And I mean, it's okay, but it's just, they take all your money, and they feed you slop and they don't care about your dietary needs. I'm allergic to mushrooms and they didn't care. They wouldn't let me know if there was mushrooms in something. While I was in there, I ate a dish, that had mushrooms and I didn't realize it did. They didn't tell me. And I had, an allergic reaction and almost stopped breathing. So I do not believe that shelters are a really good source of housing because of the fact I also have a really good friend who was at Salvation Army and she was sexually assaulted more than once and the workers did nothing about it. She herself had to, go to the hospital and, contact law enforcement for it. And, it's just not a fun place to be. While we were in the shelter, me, my daughter and her father, you know, we had to go every month. We had to go get a, money order to pay them all our money. We had no money for diapers, none of that. They gave us 5 diapers a day and 3 wipes a day. And we would have to sit here and we only got a certain amount of points a week to get hygiene products and it wasn't enough. And it's, you know, you get your own room in a family shelter, but it's not, it doesn't feel safe. My mental health while I was in there, I had really bad anxiety. My PTSD was very over the roof. And it was just, it's not a fun place to be at all. You can't express yourself or anything. If you sit here and you're pregnant there and you go into labor and you're not back within the next day, you're kicked out of the shelter. And usually when you give birth, you have to be in the hospital for at least 2 days, but you were forced to be back within the next day or you were kicked out of the shelter. I just came here to talk today just to let everyone know that, you know, the shelter is not a, option in my opinion, because of the fact of everything that a lot of people go through. Shelter is temporary. They set you up with a program, but it's not long enough for you to get stable. It's not nearly as long enough for you to get stable. So basically you get on a program and like, okay, that's it. Bye. what, you know, they don't teach you to be stable. They don't help you with anything. They don't help you with your mental health while you're in the shelter. They just, the workers think that they're better than everyone because they have a place to go. You know, they don't have to worry about, oh, am I going to get kicked out because I went into labor and I can't get out for 2-3 days because I had a C-section. You know, it's just, it's not the way to live. So I want to thank everyone for listening to my story. And thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I do think we absolutely want to acknowledge that a shelter is only seen as temporary. Our goal always, always is permanent housing for everyone. Questions, members, for either the testifiers or the bill's author? Mr. Wirth, do we have any questions?
Madam Chair, Representative Tice has a question.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a few questions, basically about how we're going to go forward. Seeing how much money we have with a lot of these projects, when are the targets coming out? Do you know?
I think it is March 24th. Mr. Wirth, I think you got a confirmation of a date, right?
They should be available by March 24th, yes.
March 24th, yes. And then we'll start our real work. We obviously have hopes for a robust target, but we will see what that is, and then we'll begin our hard conversations.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess my second question was, when are we going to start building the bill? And that'll come after that. But I just want to say that it's really been... I don't know, sobering maybe in what we hear from our communities and how our businesses are doing, and then hearing how much lumber has gone up and there aren't enough people to work. It's just been overwhelming for a lot of us, and it's been overwhelming for me as well to hear. And I was talking to Representative Mecklen, who's a builder, and he said that what we're hearing from folks in our areas is that houses that are already in progress are now looking at anywhere from $25,000 to $50,000 more just to complete because of all these different challenges and costs. And I'm looking at some of the monies that we're looking at, and it's just, I don't know that our economy can basically do it. And what really, I'd really like to see, especially next year when it's when we have our policy year, looking at ways that we can really bring forward bringing down the cost of housing. We're not seeing that at all. In fact, in environment this year, Chair Hansen had House File 1733, and what that does is it puts a fee on any change in deed or mortgage. It's both. It's not either or, it's both. $25 fee. So if you have refinance, or if you have something, if you build or buy something different, there's a $25 fee on each. And that money goes to the Soil and Water Conservation District. It's a way for our counties to make money on that. And my comment was, well, now you're really helping to make housing unaffordable. And the comment was, well, it costs money to own land in Minnesota. We have to change that. Got to change that attitude, because I realize land is important, but so is housing. And it was just really disappointing to hear that. So I hope that we look at a lot of these projects, and we have to be very serious about what can we do and what can we not do, and how do we really keep housing down. So I look for ways that we can work together to bring housing down. It's just, it's been crazy this year, and a lot of people can't afford to buy. And I'm really scared of what's happening with folks who are building, who already have contracts, and then they have to owe another 25 to 50 grand or so. I mean, it's really been crazy. I know just my husband and I doing a few remodel projects around the home, noticed what we were used to, what prices being and what they are now. So I think we have a tough job ahead of us, and I think we can do it, but I think we have to be very deliberate about that. So Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Wirth, any other questions?
Madam Chair, Representative Ryer has a question.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Keeler, for bringing this forward. I think it's important to come back to the topic of today's, of this part of this, the hearing, that there are people who, for reasons of circumstance and life's challenges, are in a position where they don't have a place to live. They may or may not have any permanent or temporary shelter. And they're seeking out a place where they can go and be safe. And too often these places fall short, leaving them with people, Ms. Goldberg, who spoke about the lack of safety that you experienced in a place where you're going to be safe. And so I want to commend the creation of this task force that includes people with lived experience, so that what we put in place as a state, as a community, to make homelessness short, rare, and non-recurring is a safe place during those intervals, and then that we have the resources to help people move into something more permanent. So thanks to you all for being here.
Thank you. Mr. Wirth, any others?
Madam Chair, there are no other questions.
Then
Madam Chair, Representative Hassan has a question.
Oh, Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Keeler, for this bill. I've always, I don't have a question. I just have a comment. I want to highlight and emphasize and underline the importance of a bill like this. I've always wondered why people would rather stay in parks, sleep in tents, under bridges, than stay at a shelter. Of course, there's a crisis that we don't have enough beds in shelters, but also shelters sometimes are not a safe place to stay. They're not culturally and ethnically appropriate for people. They're not a space that's welcoming. They're not a space that will accept you if you have, if you're not sober. So, looking at this and creating, Bill of Rights, it's a wonderful route to go. So thank you, Rep. Keeler and Rep. Gomez, for advocating for a bill like this. This is a very thoughtful way to look at shelters and make it a safer, much welcoming place for people to stay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Keeler, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for listening, but also thank you to the testifiers. They've been doing this along the way. They are sharing extreme hardships that they've experienced in their life, and that's not easy in this format or in front of us, quite frankly. And so thank you for your courage to continue to show up, because I really believe that when we hear the human side of this, we see the investment and that it's worth it. And so I appreciate all of you for the time that you've given us, and continue to move forward in this effort. Thank you.
Thank you. And behind you, we see this wonderful advice to all of us: work hard and be nice to people.
Yes.
Thank you for being with us. And now, members, we have, House File 900, as amended, is laid over. And now we have House File 1860, Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do have an amendment.
And first of all, you have to move the bill.
I'd like to move House File 1869 to be laid over.
Okay, and then an author's amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. Author's amendment,
A1.
Yep.
You're moving that?
Yes, thank you.
Representative Ryer moves the A1. You want to just let us know what the author's amendment does?
I sure would. Thank you, Madam Chair. The author's amendment adds appropriation amounts, and so for the Bridges program, it is an addition of $1.5 million over base, and then for the Landlord Risk Mitigation Program, it's a $100,000 one-time appropriation, so those are added. And in addition, we've removed Section 2, which is permanent supportive housing for people with mental illness, because it's replicates another bill that is already in process and because it really didn't fit with the scope of this bill.
Okay, so that is the author's amendment. Any discussion to the author's amendment? If not, all those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Ryer, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Hausman. Thank you, committee members. It's good to have a chance to talk about House File 1869 today. This bill provides appropriations for the Bridges Rental Assistance and a Landlord Risk Mitigation Program. Where we live matters. Having stable housing allows people with mental illnesses to focus on their recovery and turn their attention to other goals like employment or education. Unfortunately, people with mental illnesses are much more likely to experience housing instability and even homelessness. Unmanaged mental health symptoms, job loss, inpatient mental health treatment, or an experience with the criminal justice system all increase the challenges that people with mental illnesses face when trying to find and maintain a stable housing situation. And unfortunately, as we've heard in previous testimony, homelessness has been getting worse in Minnesota. Even before the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, the most recent Wilder homeless count found a 10% increase in the number of people experiencing homelessness between 2015 and 2018, with a higher rate of growth in Greater Minnesota. Just as concerning, there is a 62% increase in the number of people who are not staying in a formal shelter setting, and some of them for the reasons that we heard about just a few minutes ago. Most homeless adults also have a chronic health condition, with 64% having a serious mental illness and 24% living with a substance use disorder. And while eviction moratoriums at the state and federal levels have protected many families during the pandemic, there's a significant chance of a surge in the number of people experiencing homelessness once these moratoriums expire. House File 1869 increases funding for two programs to address these needs, one providing direct support to renters and one that reduces risk to landlords. These programs are endorsed by the Homes for All Coalition. Now I'd like to turn it over to Sam Smith from NAMI to tell you about these programs, and then we'll have another testifier, Nick Rasmussen, speaking about his experience with Bridges. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We have Sam Smith from the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sam Smith, and I'm the Public Policy Coordinator at NAMI Minnesota. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 1860. Navigating a serious mental illness while also experiencing homelessness often traps people and forces them to rely upon emergency services, hospitalization, or worse, end up in jail or prison. Access to housing interrupts this cycle and allows people to focus on their recovery. While the factors that drive people into homelessness are complicated, the solutions are often simple. There is not enough affordable housing, and there are too few supportive services to help people transition from homelessness into a stable housing situation. House File 1860 invests in two proven programs that help people with mental illnesses and other barriers access affordable housing. Bridges provides housing subsidies to people living with serious mental illnesses while they are on a waiting list for Section 8 housing assistance. Among all homeless adults interviewed during the Wilder homeless count, we see that these wait lists are long, with 50% of respondents reporting they are on a subsidized housing wait list with an average wait time of 12 months. As with the Section 8 voucher, people on Bridges rent an apartment at the regular market rates and pay 30% of their income for rent. The program provides vouchers to cover the balance. Bridges is administered by local housing authorities or other entities who manage Section 8 programs and is available in 70 counties in the Leech Lake, Mille Lacs, and Boise Fort Tribal Nations. These programs currently serve over 800 individuals and families with serious mental illness, have a home, with nearly a third of Bridges recipients being households of color. With tight rental markets, it can be very challenging for people with housing vouchers and other supports to find a landlord that is willing to rent to them. These challenges can be even greater for people with mental illnesses, experience with criminal justice, or folks with poor rental histories. Landlord risk mitigation funds respond to this problem by providing insurance for the landlord. If a tenant on a public housing voucher damages the property or fails to pay rent, the risk mitigation fund can offset some of these costs. Landlord risk mitigation programs funded by the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency are currently available in Dakota, Scott, Anoka, Washington, St. Louis, Crow Wing, Morrison, and Todd County, with 45.7% of tenants from the BIPOC community. Landlord risk mitigation funds help people with significant barriers find and maintain their housing. Both of these programs work, and NAMI Minnesota urges you to increase their funding. Thank you for your time and support of people with mental illnesses. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I have to tell you my experience with these evenings that NAMI arranges in our districts. NAMI brings clients together or family members and then invites the legislator in the area to hear their stories. And I can just remember this powerful experience this one evening where we're sitting in a living room and we went around the room and everyone told their story. And without exception, housing was the issue that was the thing that didn't enable them to get to a better place. One person in the room, one person had stable housing, and he credited that with years of a stable life. So that defining issue in helping to get to a better point in your life is, it just came so powerfully home that night as I listened to their stories in that living room. So thank you, NAMI, for arranging those opportunities for us. We now have Nicholas Rasmussen. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Hello, my name is Nicholas Rasmussen, and I reside at 6953 West 140th Street in Savage, Minnesota.
Welcome.
Thank you. I was a software engineer and entrepreneur. I worked often and slept little. In 2013, I experienced a psychotic break. It was 36 months from the onset of symptoms before I received the treatment I needed. During the interim, I had repeated contact with law enforcement, the judiciary, community members, and healthcare workers. Prior to getting the help I needed, I consumed massive amounts of resources for no real benefit to anyone. When my illness was finally identified and I received the hospitalization I needed, my illness had progressed to the point where I spent 2 months in a psychiatric unit at Abbott Northwestern Hospital at a cost of $176,525.40. I then spent approximately 2 months in an IRT center. I don't know how much that cost. While in the hospital, my home was foreclosed on. I was very fortunate that I was able to convince family members to move some of my things out of my house before the bank took it back, or I would have no longer had any possessions. On discharge from the hospital, I was homeless. I'm very fortunate that I had an adult mental health caseworker assigned to me, as he was able to make arrangements for me to reside in Scott County's transitional housing, which in this case was a duplex owned by the county. My relationship with my family had deteriorated to such an extent they were no longer willing to offer me a place to stay. Again, I was very fortunate that my case manager was able to get me a Bridges voucher, which gave me 60 days to find housing and would subsidize my rent. After much difficulty, we found a landlord who would work with the voucher and my now bad credit and criminal history. Without the Bridges voucher, I believe I would have ended up in a homeless shelter. Unfortunately, the Housing Choice voucher is not a readily available source of housing support. In Scott County, the waiting list, which recently opened up for about a week, had been closed for 14 years. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. It's always so helpful to hear people willing to tell their story to help us understand the complexity of the issues before us. Members, do we have questions of the bill's author or testifiers? Mr. Worth, do we have any questions?
Madam Chair, there are no questions in the queue.
Representative Ryer, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, thank you, Mr. Rasmussen, for sharing your story. It's powerful. It's so touching. I'm kind of recovering myself from the emotion of knowing and having it brought to life the importance of what we're doing here today. Because we have a great opportunity here. We can step up. We can address disparities in housing access. We can address the needs of people like Mr. Rasmussen and so many others who are counting on the state. So I'm asking you and hoping for your support to increase these appropriations. And I thank you all very much.
And we're all eagerly waiting for that target to come out on March 24th when we can make some of these decisions. So thank you, Representative Ryer. House File 1860, as amended, is laid over. Our next meeting will be on Thursday, March 18 at 10:30 a.m. There being no other business before us, we are adjourned.